Okay. Can we fix this noise? Thanks. Okay, I'm pretty confident that this will work. Wow, it's amazing. It's so intimidating, so many people. I didn't think about that when I put in the suggestion for the talk. Anyway, now I'm here and I have to do it. So I will start by lowering your expectations. It's work in progress. And it's about machines. And I would like to convince you that there's sort of a new type of machine we are seeing. And once I manage that, I would like to show you a bit what I think this new type of machine will change. About my background. So one reason this is so intimidating is I'm not working with robots normally. I'm a physicist. What I do is more like nano-archaeology. People come to me and they bring me a chip and they say, we did something and we would really like to know what exactly, and then it's not so funny, it's a common problem. And then we have tools and we can cut these chips open and then go to the atomic level and really see what these people have done. So this is what I'm normally talking about. Today I want to talk about something different. The last 4 years I was in Finland working on my PhD, and I had the chance to work on a project called Big Bang Race to the Future. The project was initiated as a sort of a graduate course, 1 year project. The idea was to find out what the future, the technological future would look like in 2025, and in particular how this would affect the Finnish economy. And this project was led by the former CTO of Nokia, Yrjö Nervo, and goal was to write a book, sort of a technology roadmap for 2025. The topic I've been working on, one of the topics I've been working on, was autonomous machines. And those are my collaborators. We had a pretty diverse team. We had here, Jake was actually, he studied information technology. We had a lawyer. Vesa is a filmmaker. We had some people with a machine background and some people with a business background. And we managed to write about technology and about autonomous machine, and we called this chapter of the book Augmenting Man. And I will talk a bit about what this group of people, kind of unlikely group of people, came up with, and I will elaborate a bit on some new ideas that came during writing this. One part of this job, project, was a trip to Silicon Valley, and we met lots of people. We visited lots of places, Berkeley, Stanford, Google, and so on. And the idea was to learn about the future there, kind of seeing it as a beacon for, or as a lab where new ideas are tried out. And we met a lot of amazing people, but these people are not the self-reflecting type of kind, you know. They have solutions, and they rather not talk about problems. And instead of doing this roadmap and really describing the technology, we try to look a bit behind the facts and behind the technology and see what kind of problems or new chances we will encounter. So I will give a brief introduction about what I mean with machine emancipation. I will explain how I see the future of autonomous machines. I try to convince you this is a very important important problem and that we should rather sooner than later start thinking about it. And then I will discuss whether this might change the world as we know it. So it's a humble job. Machine emancipation. What are machines essentially doing? We started out thinking that machines augment our capabilities, mainly our physical capabilities. In fact, we often like to see man as the animal that uses tools. And it's, I think, okay to say we have been cyborgs since we started using fire. You cannot distinguish, or it's very difficult to think about us without technology. So the way we eat, the way we live, it all has been also a history of machines. I call these old machines. Why old machines? Because they are really not much without the operator. These machines, like a sewing machine, a car, a hammer, those are simple machines that are built to make things that our body is not capable of doing by itself. There's a sewing machine, but there you can already see that something is changing. We're getting kind of a new type of machine. We have started combining building mechanical tools that were able to do something beyond just working on physical things. So we built computers, and now we start combining these computers with machines. So old machines are kind of like an extension of our body, like an extended phenotype, if you like like some biologists put it. These new machines, these combinations of mechanical and processing capabilities, I think we have to look at them more like animals, like symbiotic creatures that we have created that do work for us, but they are distinctly different from this old type of machine that needs the operator. And it's sort of it's a sliding scale, so we don't have fully autonomous machines at the moment, but I'm convinced that we can already see where the future is leading us. And William Gibson said, the future is already here, it's just unevenly distributed. So we can start looking. What can we find? We see these first nice little creatures popping up in households. They become pretty cheap and, well, you get what you pay for, they're pretty dumb. But there's also experimental new things, like here the MIT has built these little gardening robots. So they're not very refined, but you can see where the idea is going. Just imagine having those and making them feed on something like sunlight, and then have an army of those running around your field doing agriculture for you. This is kind of a really big thing. Other places, healthcare. Healthcare, we are seeing also amazing things happening. Here we have some, so this is actually not autonomous machine. This would be an old machine, but it's already starting. You see, this still needs an operator, but not for very much longer. So we think now about building machines that are able to operate on the beating heart because they can react fast enough. So this is where it definitely goes beyond something that's just operated. We use these machines for teaching, and that's, at least here it would be controversial, but in other cultures we use them for entertaining our old people. So you see, these machines are really kind of creeping into our everyday life. Of course, still at the moment, the biggest part where the biggest budget is for research is the security, or let's say the war part of the industry. There will be a talk later, I think it's right after mine, so I'm quite interested to see what are the really new developments in this field. But we have armed and unarmed robots that are being deployed on battlefields in the hundreds and thousands. And if we want to go a bit further, like look at the experimental field, where we see new developments, we can easily imagine something like this doing actually useful things for us. And the reason I like this is because I like to think that, or like this this big talk, because I like to think of machines and autonomous machines as very related to animals. And if we think about, are these machines intelligent? Well, I think we can say they are at least in the intelligence comparable to maybe a stupid dog, maybe a donkey, I don't know, something like that. They probably beat fish already. They definitely look much cooler. I mean, come on, they have glowing eyes. And they can also, they can be quite pretty. I really like these seals, the flying seals, or whatever they are. Again, can we now say these machines are intelligent? Most of us would say, no, they're definitely not. How can something that manages to drive around be called intelligent? I think this distinction that we make between, for example, animals, okay, we don't call animals intelligent either, but at least we see a clear distinction between animals and machines. And I think the reason is that machines look at the world with different senses, and different senses also create a different world. So a computer, it's not a good image, but a computer looks at the world, it looks at what are the networks that are surrounding me, what are the wireless networks, what's my temperature. So those are already kind of is my hard drive full? Those are already, it's starting to become some sort of, you could call it self-awareness, very rudimental, but it looks at parameters and decides, are they okay, are they not? So in a sense, I think we might say that machines already have some self-awareness comparable to very simple animals. What does that mean? If we accept this idea that we will create machines that are no longer... they might still be servants to us, but they are no longer the machines that we have lived with, mankind has lived with over the past tens of thousands of years. Maybe just to give you an idea what I think the magnitude of the shift is, let's look at other things machines have done. I think this is the pinnacle of the old type of machine. It basically would a doomsday device, a machine that could destroy all life on Earth, is pretty much the pinnacle of augmenting man's physical capability. We see also other effects, and I don't want to now go into discussion whether it's real or not, but I think that we have, with this power of machines, managed to create side effects that are also visible already on a global scale. So what's going to be the next big thing? What are these autonomous machines going to do with us? Will there be robot overlords trying to kill us? It definitely makes for a good movie. But wouldn't mankind rebel against these machines? I don't think so. If they would look like a Terminator, definitely they would. But these machines are, of course, created, but they are created in an evolutionary process. Those machines that are better equipped to fulfill our needs, they are more likely to be built again. And the machines converge to something which gets better and better, adjusted to, for example, attracting our buying power. We see similar things in nature. We like to think that we have lots of kittens but very little cockroaches. It's probably not true, but if we could, we would kill them. I guess what I want to say, there's a very strong selection pressure on animals as well as machines. For animals, it is we kill what we don't like, or we kill what we like a lot to eat. So how does this help to predict the future? If you look at this extreme success that some animals have, there's a lot of money involved in that. And a similar, this is actually the pressure that decides what type of machines are built. It's not what is like technologically possible. This is not the milestone. What is built is what is most economically feasible. And what will that mean for machines? I think we will see machines that look much like animals, like furry little things. They're not threatening to us. Or they look like other things that we like. So men are building machines, and men will be buying machines, so it's quite likely that they will look somewhat pleasing to the eye. So it's quite funny, if you watch YouTube videos of these little hamsters, they seem to be the hottest thing to buy for kids in the States at the moment, at least for this Christmas. They're pretty stupid, but at least they're about as good as a hamster. I mean, it's a hamster cannot do much more. And a hamster sleeps most of the day, so it's, I would even argue they're more entertaining. So, what now, why New World Order? Why does this new type of machine, this autonomous machine, affect the way we live? And I would like to pick out a very particular part of our society that it will affect, kind of the underlying structure of our lives. We had in the 20th century, we had this big fight of economic and political systems. We had communism versus socialism versus capitalism. And the core of these systems that we have lived with our whole life is work. So all these systems are centered around the concept of work, working, the worker, and so on. And not only political systems, also our religious ideas are very strongly influenced by work. If you look at the seven deadly sins, you will read that sloth is one of them. So idleness, not working, is actually against at least the Protestant view of the world order. Max Weber put that in his work on the Protestant ethic and capitalism. He described that the work ethic is the foundation of capitalism. Interestingly, this has not always been like this. If you read older texts, sloth was not among the deadly sins. It was acedia, so that if you don't use your talents, that would be a sin against the creation, but not just plain idleness. What does this have to do with the machines? I would like to make the following postulate. There is no physical task in which a human can outperform a robot. This is not true at the moment, but this is true in principle, unless someone comes up with one instantly. I don't think there will be in the future a task that a robot cannot, a physical task, that a robot cannot do better than a human. Just because we can spend arbitrary amount of time optimizing the robot for a certain task. We cannot spend arbitrary amount of time to optimize a human for a certain task. Also, once we have trained one, we would have to then make him train others, and this is all very complicated, and then the people get old and they die, and it's all not very effective or efficient. And of course, there's this limitations. We have only 10 fingers, for example, or we have 2 eyes. It's also not very helpful, and we can only see a very small amount of the light spectrum. It's, of course, we have enhanced all these capabilities, physical and mental capabilities, by machines. But even though there's an ongoing enhancement, augmentation of our capabilities, the reason that we can focus work of many people on creating a robot to do a certain thing, I think that this statement holds true in the near future. What does it mean? If you look at this curve, which is the numbers of calculations that I can do per $1,000 over time, we see that these machines will not only be able to do better than humans, but at one point they will also be able to do it cheaper. And the result of this development is that everything that can possibly be automated everything that can possibly be automated will be. And I did not see that on the internet first. I walked on the street and saw it. So these things are real. Well, they still need a human to then take it and put it into the bread, but take the meat and put it into the bread, but it's just a matter of time. You see, the humans, they steal, and then they're probably lazy, or they're late, or they get pregnant, or whatever. So all these physical tasks can be and probably will be automated. And now you can cry out that this is the Luddite fallacy, and we have seen that people have been telling this story for almost centuries. The difference is the Luddites were fighting against this old type of machine, some machine that merely augments our capabilities. Now we have a new type of machine, something that is not so closely linked to us. What will remain to do? People think that the only job left, for example, the former Secretary of Labor under the Clinton administration, he says that the only jobs left will be what he calls symbolic analysts, people that think instead of people that do something with their hands. Now the question is this a problem? Is it Friday or is it Sunday? Do we have to work? Do we want to work? Or are we happy with idleness? If you look at paintings pre-Luther, you see that the ideal, the medieval ideal of heaven was pure idleness. Heaven was Sunday. Sunday was sloth, like doing nothing. Instead of, or the opposite was hell with lots of work. And people were actually dreaming of being idle. The question is, what stays left to do? What can we do if work is not a necessity? I mean, there are arguably some really shitty jobs that no one wants to do, but there are also kind of nice jobs. What if there is no necessity to work? History knows no situations like this. Feudalism, there were people that didn't have to work. But it's kind of only fun if you have people that do, that you can kind of rule over. Max Weber, when he wrote the Protestant work ethic, about the Protestant work ethic, his example for the perfect working spirit was the working rules in monasteries. This pray and work, ora et labora. But if you think about it, these people do not really work. They entertain themselves, but they don't have to work. All these monasteries were, most of these monasteries were extremely rich. So they were working, but not in the true sense of work for assuring their livelihood. Can we use this model and transfer it to our modern times? Do we want to go back to either this medieval idleness, this ideal of Sunday as the perfect lifestyle? Or do we want to do something different? And I think what we see here today is sort of one answer, and one answer that I would like to see talked about more. We definitely need new political concepts, new concepts for society. There are ideas. There's a growing movement for an unconditional basic income. But typically, these ideas are not connected to the idea of, they are seen as some ideal type of society, but are not argued for as a necessity. And I think this new type of machines will sooner or later make these new models a necessity. One answer to the question, what can we do if we don't have to work for securing our livelihood? This is what Pekka Himanen describes in his hacker ethic. And he's not talking about what you typically find as hacker ethics, but hacker work ethics. The idea that you work on something because you are interested in it, because you would like, you want to do it, and not as a necessity for, or as a necessity to provide one's livelihood. And I think the fact that you all came here and listened to me, that I came here and talked, is sort of a good example for something that could be normal and not just an exception in a society where we can delegate. Unnecessary work to machines. And for that reason, I, for one, welcome our new robot overlords. So with that, I think it's open for discussion here. I have to ask everyone that wants to ask a question to use one of the mics that are provided. Are they? Well, just ask your question. I will repeat it. It's easier. Oh, there's one.
I have the microphone. I'll bring it over to that microphone stand, and you can line up behind it, ask questions, and he will answer.
Does it work? Okay, I will repeat your question.
Want to? It's okay. So I got a question, because when you say that there were already in the early history a situation where people don't have to work, I think at the moment of the ancient Greece, where there were slaves and free men, and we thought about it with my colleague at work some days ago, so it was quite funny to see you telling about this today. Did you think on how it was in the ancient Greece when those free men didn't have to work? And the point is that since they can practice idleness, they participate to the city organization and so on. Because if we don't have to work, we still have to work on organizing ourselves in cities and countries and so on. So did you study the ancient Greece?
Yeah, I think the analogy is pretty obvious. And we were kind of thinking of robots as a sort of slave labor, but it's not a good term. It's not, if you want to advertise an idea, it's not a good way of wording it. But we can already see similar things happening. Not everybody has to work. There are lots of people because they are retired, for example, or because they have money from other sources, can spend their time doing something productive for society.
We've got a question back here, actually.
And I'd like to ask you if you're into nanotechnics. What do you think about microchipped population, so that humans will transform into robots, kind of way?
Well, that's kind of a bit different topic. If there's a market, I mean, if there are people that want to do it, eventually they might. I would not rule it out. I don't see it happening in the next 10 years. And we were thinking like 2025, so.
Yeah, I think you have given an interesting talk, but I also think there's a kind of a logical fallacy in all this, which is that we're on the verge of something. Because I'm very sure I haven't seen a verge yet. And what I mean is, yeah, there's little hamsters and robots that slice meat and stuff like that. But all of those machines are not as smart as even the tiniest ant that lives in an anthill, because they can't do most of the basic things. I mean, they're like set off on their path, which we have determined, like the little hamsters. They scurry through their tubes, but as soon as the batteries run out, the child loses interest, they die.
Yeah, that's a very good point, but I think you have to look at the evolutionary pressures that have created these machines. They work a certain way because we want them to work. So we create an environment for them where we feed them with batteries, so they don't have to forage. And for computers, for example, we want them to work like clockworks, because if your computer would wake up and you would try to wake up your computer and says, no, I'm sorry, I'm tired, or... you know, I have my lazy day off, that computer would not be sold. So that's why the machines that surround us have such a linear behavior, such a clockwork behavior. But I think for the world that they live in, they are borderline comparable to animals. Just computers and animals live in different worlds.
One question. I really missed the social aspect. Did you also cover the social aspect of this development? Up to now, we have about maybe 10% of the world inhabitants who profit from technology. And if you only need a couple of people to develop these robots, what happens with the rest?
Yeah, I think... what I've tried to do is to show what I think is happening, to create a model how we can live in a world where work is not a means of providing one's livelihood, because there's other people or other robots that can do the work more efficient. You need to restructure society. And for this restructuring, there are ideas out there. They're just not widely accepted at the moment. And at the moment, if you look at German politics, it's only the people who work should lead a happy life.
As you've pointed out, machines are becoming similar to animals in the future, and we've already obliged rules to them, like Asimov's Law, etc. Do you think we'll have to talk about rights of machines at some point in time? Even as they become, or especially because they'll become more intelligent and self-aware and stuff, so really like living creatures.
Yeah, probably we will. I mean, we discuss about animal rights, but that's a dividing issue. I like meat. I guess the majority will like robots working for them. So I think the bigger problem is how to create a social, a similar thing to a social contract that allows us what allows companies to actually build autonomous machines. This is something I have not discussed, but we wrote about great lengths in the book. What's holding back machines at the moment is not technology as much. It is also technology, but it's also liability issues, for example. So this is, I think, the more pressing problem. How do we integrate machines in our legal systems, for example?
It's not a question. It's more thing to look at. The question is, what about social bonding to the machines? For example, in healthcare or raising children or something like this, are the people is the mankind able to survive if they bond to machines instead of other humans?
I mean,
that's a big topic. I think everyone should think about.
Yeah, maybe just one comment. I mean, lots of people bond to animals, and there are some people on the extreme side that would rather marry their dog than a real partner because the dog is more obedient. Yeah, it will happen, but I think there's a widespread of possibilities.
Hi. I don't know. It's consciousness is a must-have for what you're talking about. What do you think in the long term of machines and software reaching consciousness in some point of time?
I think that what I'm trying to argue for is that we can already build self-conscious machines in a sense that I would like to understand to some degree self-consciousness as some sort of self-monitoring system. So that part we could already implement.
You've asked your question or no? Okay.
Whether that creates real self-consciousness, I don't know. But I see no fundamental problem with it. But, I mean, it's a question of complexity.
Like self-aware.
Pardon?
Like self-aware.
I mean, self-awareness in the sense that it knows, if you look at a large machine, let's say a power plant, it's to some extent self-aware. It knows which parts are working, which parts are not. On that level, I think we have it, and on a... Well, I guess it's also very difficult and this is definitely beyond my field and my understanding, how to define self-awareness in people.
I was very impressed from how you described the difference between the tools in earlier times and the tools we have now, we are using now. But I'm wondering, isn't it possible, or I mean, we are striving to it, to develop or redevelop those old tools, these extensions to the man, to make or to improve human in itself? Don't we have the, or is a major problem not that we will have very intelligent machines in a few hundred years, but more that we will get new men with a group of men, not all, of course, because it's always so. I mean, we are here lucky in Europe, we have much money, and so we can develop us and we can improve us. And so if we have the ability to improve us technology, we will do that for us, of course. But I don't think we will think on other other regions of the world as...
No, I mean...
We don't do it. Yeah. Is there the ethic problem not that, or that is more... nearer in time to us? Is this not the one that we will get at a point where we are so much better, in quotes, than the rest of the world that they never can catch up to us?
I don't know whether they could not catch up, but we'd like to not let them catch up. I mean, that's why we spend so much money on developing weapon systems, because we are not many that are so rich, but and we don't like to die for it. So that's one of the driving motors behind building robots for military applications.
But should we should start to think now about how far we want to develop our Western society and how we want to integrate the whole world into it. I think that's a really ethical question we should discuss, or our society should start to discuss now before we become so...
I could not agree more, but I don't think it's going to happen. I think progress will just keep coming. And we cannot say, stop everyone, wait a minute, let's think about it first. So I think we really have to... Yes, we can. And that... Are we pressed on time?
We have 15 minutes.
Okay.
We have 15 minutes remaining.
Okay. But if you, I wanted to integrate that into the presentation, but this is some flash thing, and I couldn't get it in. If you look at the mortality rate, or the not mortality, what's it called? The life expectancy. Has increased dramatically due to progress over the last, let's say, 50 or 100 years. And it has also increased in the poorest region of the world. Of course, it has increased a lot more in Western Europe and in the rich parts of the world. But we see, if we look at it, for example, I think it's a good indicator, mortality rate, not mortality rate, life expectancy is a good indicator. And there we see that across the board this has gone up.
Yes. I find your vision of the future really sort of heartwarming, this idea that you know, everybody would have a sort of stipend and people would just do the work that they would want to do and feel called to do, and that sort of mundane tasks would be given to robots. But I feel like I've got sort of a nagging in the back of my head, and I'm not quite sure how to articulate it. But it seems to me like a lot of innovation comes from places where people really have to work. You know, for example, India, or you know, you have parts of the world where there is no social contract, and people need to have to work and have to find new ways and new strategies and sort of compete with each other. I mean, maybe it's just my own sort of ingrained Protestant work ethic that I have trouble. Overcoming here, but could you respond to that, or does that seem a problem to you? Or I mean, this sort of idea
it could
motivation,
be.
Or
I would not rule it out, but I have not seen the evidence for it. Mm. I mean, we see a lot of development coming out of, for example, India or China, mm-hmm. but we also have lots of people living there. Mm. So I don't know what happens if you normalize the numbers, whether it still holds true or not.
So you'd see that purely as a numbers, there are a lot of people there, so they're innovating.
I mean, there's this saying that China has more A students than the U.S. has students. So it I just have to see that this could be a reason.
Yeah, thank you.
Would you grant autonomous machines rights, like the right to refuse?
No.
Why not?
That would be a difficult world. I don't know. It's probably not up to me, luckily, but it might happen. Yeah, I mean, I would not rule it out. But then again, these machines are evolving under very strong pressure to be obedient, so they might actually like it. Yeah. Of course, I mean, you buy the machine that really helps you, and so if I build a machine, I build a machine the way that it likes to help you.
You wanted to ask one, right?
Okay, I have two questions. First, according to the fact robot is a creation of the human, so robot has the good and the bad of the human in a certain way, because it will reproduce the mistake of the human because the human is a creator. So we are in a society today which is more or less decreasing. Less space for like human science in the school, or you know, teaching human science in the school, or philosophy, or whatever. So do you think the development of robo is going to reflect that aspect of the society? That means as the society is decreasing, is the robot will decrease as well because it's a human creation. This is my first question.
Yeah, I think we can see that in a sense that we're not only building robots that have medical applications, but we're also building the opposite. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to predict. I was trying to focus on just the aspect of work and what that like small part would mean for society. Of course, it's a bigger picture.
Yeah, because it will be less money for developing. I mean, the whole aspect of the robot, so we are going to focus on certain aspect only, then this consequence on the development of the future of the robot will affect it, no?
Yeah, you're completely right.
Okay, and the second question, what do you think will be the effect on the robot on the birth rate? I mean, there is 14 company who are building robot between South Korea and Japan. I mean, a robot for young person, for children, or for each person, you know. And if you think about the fact to have a robot is really less expensive to have than to have a children, and your robot is not going to get drug addict, and your robot is going to give an emotional links with you, which maybe could be good enough to be at the same level of the link with the children? Is a kind of provocative question, but what is your position?
I think this is not just restricted to robots. It's money makes you less likely to become a parent. High education standards, high living standards in general seem to really be bad for our reproduction.
You don't think robot will be an easy patch to loneliness?
Yeah, probably.
Any other questions?
You said that you think that until 2025, robots are going to be much better in all physical tasks. Was that correct?
Yes, I would think so.
Okay. Because it's hard for me to believe in our tasks, but
But what I've been saying is that I think you could, if you wanted, build one for a specific task that would outperform a human.
Reproduction. Well, there's many athletic, physical things that are extremely well built by biology and almost very hard in that
in
short
a sense,
time to develop.
Of course, we can for a while try to create certain situations that are difficult for robots. But I see no fundamental reason why a robot could not outperform us.
It's just human in this case, not only biologic things.
Any other questions? All right.
Hi, I'm Sven. For first point, I don't see how to fix this into neuroscience. Like, the situation is that may they find out how to work all this in biological terms. So they build, or they're trying to build systems on biological level that do the same things as robots would do. So if you think those, or combine those two things together, you start building cells that are capable of sensing and trying to figure out how their environment is. And now you combine this with our ability to steer things and make them drive into a certain direction or something like that. You could think of a robot that is made out of biological components that actually don't fit into robot kind of terms, but it's more like a new being. So if you combine this with your talk, would you say that we would rather see a mechanical robot in your kind of vision, or you see a more animal-like being?
We haven't thought about it, but it's of course, there's lots of time and money spent into reverse engineering biological systems. But I think that the distinction on a functional level is not so important between a biological system and a robot. I mean, a robot, I would like to argue that we should see robots more like animals instead of seeing animals more like robots. Do I make sense? I don't know. I mean, maybe I misunderstood your question.
Okay, I have two questions. The first one is a boring logistical one, and I apologize for asking it during your talk. You mentioned at the beginning another talk on robotic warfare, but it's been removed from the schedule. Does anyone know what's happening? Is it gone forever? I'm quite interested in that topic. No.
Me too. Maybe
one for the angels, I guess. And I also find the worldview where we'll have a race of highly intelligent machines doing all of our manual labor for us whilst we live in a sort of hacker utopia. I find that very appealing, like the other chap, but I think it's unrealistic for two sort of related reasons. Firstly, if we engineer a race of machines of equal or exceeding capacity to ourselves, then do they not deserve the same rights as us, and therefore are enslaving them to do the work that we don't want to do? It hardly seems fair. And the obviously the follow-on problem is a potential robot revolt.
Can I answer to the first question first before?
Okay, sure.
I think I have maybe been not too careful to separate autonomous and intelligent. I don't know what intelligent machines means really. I would like more to talk about autonomous machines in a sense that they can do things for themselves. Intelligence in a sense that they can navigate in a complex environment. And I think that does not mean that they are self-reflecting or that they exceed us in all capabilities. I really try to focus on the physical capabilities that they can, for example, if you give them an IKEA sideboard, that they can put it together.
Okay. So you think it's possible that we could get to the point where maybe 90% of our labor is outsourced to machines, but those machines can be sufficiently simple that moral questions won't start to be that important.
I think the question is not whether it can be done, but whether it would be cheaper.
Okay, right. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Do you have a website? I just didn't know where exactly. Where can we contact you or just see your work or what you've been up to?
There's a book, but it seems to be still difficult to get it outside of Finland. So there is, at the moment, no real website. I mean, the project is basically over. I've been talking about things we did during this project. I can give you my email address, but we did not really, beyond like writing this book, we did not really put much thought into making some public appearance on the net or something.
Okay, maybe I'll get you. Cool.
And
it's called Big Bang: Race to the Future.
And that looks to be about the end of the time. So thank you very much. Can we have one more big round of applause, please?